And now, for the last thing in the program for this week, we have a special Christmas story from Joe White in his book, Christmas in My Heart, Book 8, copyright 2016. The title of the story is Special Delivery by Margaret E. Sangster, Jr. Feeling sorry for the poor woman, Karen bought the 20 Christmas cards, then felt foolish, for all her cards were already sent. Well, not quite all, but the only way to get them there in time was to send them special delivery. In the time in which the story was written, special delivery mail was processed in hours. Margaret E. Sangster, Jr., who lived from 1894 to 1981, author of The Littlest Orphan in the book Christmas in My Heart, Book 1, Lonely Tree in Christmas in My Heart, Book 3, With a Star on Top, Christmas in My Heart, Book 5, and Small Things, Christmas in My Heart, Book 6, was one of the most beloved inspirational writers in early America, early in the 20th century. Now, a new generation of readers is gathering her to the heart. And now the story, Special Delivery. It was in the afternoon, 2 days before Christmas, that a poor woman, wrapped in a shawl and carrying a basket on her arm, came to the door of the office where Karen Lansing was employed. The woman hesitated on the threshold, and Karen, glancing up from her typewriter, saw an unmasked eagerness lay across the thin face. "Is there anything I can do for you?" she queried. The woman stepped hesitantly over the sill. "I've been selling Christmas cards," she told Karen, "and I have only 2 packages of them left. I thought maybe you or someone else in this office might need cards." Her voice paused on a questioning note. Karen started to say, "But it's too late now to be buying Christmas cards. My cards were bought long ago. They were addressed in the mail yesterday." She started to say, "I'm the only one in the office this afternoon. Everybody's left for the holiday." But before she could answer, she glanced again into the woman's face, and the excuses died on her lips. She read, in the mute appeal of a pair of tired eyes, what this last-minute sale would mean. It would mean the difference between profit and loss, between success and failure, perhaps between hunger and food. So instead, she asked, "How much are they?" And when the woman murmured, "25 cents a package," she thrust a dollar bill into the reddened, ungloved hand. "You can keep the change," she said kindly. She wanted to add, "You can keep the cards, too, and resell them." But a proud, aloof quality in that tense, shawl-shrouded face warned her to withhold this last remark. The woman laid the 2 packages on Karen's desk. She murmured a phrase, halfway beneath her breath, that sounded like, "God bless you." In less time than it takes to tell, the door closed behind her, and Karen was alone. Alone with 2 packages of cards that she didn't need any more than a cat needs 2 tails. Afternoon became late afternoon. Karen finished her typing and tidied her desk and began to close the office. She pulled on her modish beret and buttoned her warm cloak and gathered up her handbag. Into the handbag she thrust, in an almost automatic way, the packages of Christmas cards. And then she went home to the room of a boarding house where she lived. On the way home, she stopped at the florist to buy a holly wreath to hang in her window and mistletoe spray to put in a vase on her mantle. She purchased also a supply of special delivery stamps. "It's rank extravagance," she mused to herself. "But now that I've bought the silly cards, I'll use them." I'll send them somewhere, and the special deliveries will guarantee their arrival before Christmas. Send them somewhere. And Karen sorting over the cards, and they were very pretty too. At first, could not think of anyone she had neglected. All her friends would receive the messages of greeting that she had sent the day before. A few friends, probably, had already received them. Her relatives, several cousins, and an aunt, or two, would receive more substantial remembrances. So would the two girls who shared her office. Her boss, Karen laughed as she thought of the stern young man who was her employer. Well, she hadn't sent him a card or a present either. Probably none of his staff would remember him. And yet, why not? He was a human being, though he was a very repressed specimen, and this was Christmas week. Determinedly, she chose the prettiest of the cards, signed her name in the corner of it, and slipped it into an envelope. "That's one," she said, and went on with the impromptu addressing. 20 cards had seemed insurmountably difficult at the beginning. But when she got started at them, Karen was surprised to discover that there were ever so many people who would be glad for a cordial message. The florist, for instance, from whom she had bought the holly and the mistletoe, the laundress who did her small weekly wash, the landlady of the boarding house, and the lonely old man who sat at a table by himself in the far end of the dining room. Speaking of dining rooms, there was the waitress who served her daily at luncheon in a tea shop in the business district. Luckily, Karen knew the girl's name. 20 cards indeed. 6 were disposed of, and with no effort. Karen sent the 7th to the cleaner, who had the dingy shop nearby and did her occasional refurbishing. She sent 1 to the elevator boy in her office building, and 1 to the pastor of the great city church, where she put in a shy but regular appearance. She sent a card to the pale girl, obviously an invalid, who lived across the street. She'd seen her often in a window, and she'd made a mental note of the name that was engraved upon the copper door plate. That was 10 gone. The last 10 cards weren't quite so easy. But Karen, making a game of it, wrote addresses with a sparkle in her eyes and a flush on her cheeks. There was that young man, brother of a girl, who had worked briefly at the desk next to her own. He had taken her to a concert once and had never called again. Probably, Karen scolded herself, because she'd been too self-conscious to ask him to call. There was the butcher, who had refused a coin when she went into his shop to buy liver for a stray cat. Then the pastor in the little country church where she had gone as a child. Had he forgotten her? And her first Sunday school teacher, whom she hadn't seen for 12 years. There was the widowed mother of 5, who had purchased the old homestead from her father's small estate, and the boarding house cook, who never emerged from the basement. She thought of May Kent, a friend from her youth up with whom she had foolishly quarreled 2 years before. "I've but 1 card left," Karen told herself gently. "I'll send it to May. This is Christmas, and Christmas should be a making-up time." 20 cards! They would not have been sent but for a chance impulse of generosity toward an unfortunate woman. Yet when Christmas morning was still new, Karen began to gather in the fruits of that impulse. For on the breakfast table, at her place, reposed a wee frosted cake done up in wax paper. And the boarding house manager came over to explain its presence. "Cook made it for you," she said. "You were the only boarder to send her a card. I loved my card, too. It's folk like you who make a hard profession easier. She sighed. The old man, who sat alone, came into the dining room while Karen was finishing her breakfast. He walked directly over to her and thrust forth a slender, fragile hand. "I've always thought," he said huskily, "that I'd like to have a daughter who was as pretty as you are, Miss... The name's Lansing, isn't it? I'll amend the thought today. I'd like to have a daughter as sweet and gracious as you are." It was in the middle of the morning that Karen, dressing to go out for a stroll in the brisk December wind, heard a knock on her door. She opened it up to a small boy from the florist shop who carried a paper cone in his hand. "It's a present," he said. "It's from the store." And Karen, pulling off the shrouding paper, saw that the cone contained a corsage of gardenias. And so it went all through Christmas Day. The cleaner emerged as Karen passed the shop, that was also his home, to clasp her hand and murmur words in broken English. The pastor of the church hailed her as she went by the imposing brownstone parsonage and came out on his front steps to wish her the joy of the season. The pale girl in the window across the street blew her a kiss from transparent fingers. Karen returned from her Christmas stroll, feeling that she was part of a dream and that the whole dream was her friend. And the dream persisted. There was a phone call in the early evening from the brother of her old friend. "I've wanted to so often to get in touch with you again," he told her, "but I thought you didn't like me. I've been walking on air ever since I got your card. Will you let me take you to a party on New Year's Eve?" Karen's cheeks were shell pink, even though she was talking over the phone, and she murmured her assent. She went to bed on Christmas night with joy in her heart and a prayer of thankfulness on her lips. The dream carried over into the next day. The laundress, arrived with a neat bundle, was voluble. "I never before had a special delivery letter," she told Karen. "I was that pleased I tinted two of your slips. It was faded." Karen thanked her warmly and went to breakfast. On the hall table, she found three letters, one from the old pastor, one from her Sunday school teacher, and one from the mother of five. "My good wishes have followed you across the years," wrote the pastor. "I was feeling old and lonely," the Sunday school teacher's feathery writing said, "and you renewed my faith in things and brought a glimmering of youth to my holiday." The widowed mother of five wrote merely a line or two. "We have been happy in the home that used to belong to your people. I felt sure you'd be glad to know." Karen, walking to her office, passed the butcher shop. The butcher was opening in his door to an early customer, but he shouted, "Any time you want liver for a cat, you know where to come." And she went by the tea shop where she lunched. The waitress, just unlatching shutters, slipped out to say, "You're a darling, miss." Karen laughed and squeezed her hand. When the elevator boy said simply, "That special message meant a lot, Miss Karen," her eyes were damp. But when her boss met her at the door, shook hands soberly and blurted out, "You're a peach, Miss Lansing, to remember me." The dampness evaporated and her eyes were all a smile. It was seeing the smile that made her boss smile suddenly in answer. And Karen knew with a sense of complete surety that her work would be pleasanter from now on, and that the wall of ice between the young man and his staff was destined to melt away. "But why shouldn't I remember you?" she queried. The boss swallowed hard. He looked at Karen as if he were seeing her for the first time. Oh, yes, there's been a Miss May Kent calling you. She's going to call again later. She said to tell you she'd received your message and knew what it meant. She could scarcely wait to hear the sound of your voice. And so a reminder that a simple smile, thank you, or praise can make somebody's day much brighter. Merry Christmas from Chips and Bites.